Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. You'll find all the TWiT shows on your Roku box, Android, and BlackBerry phones, and all Yahoo Widget TVs powered by MediaFly. For more information, visit twit.tv/MediaFly. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 68, recorded November 10th, 2010. It's in my breast pocket. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues remotely with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/Twig. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off the lifetime of your new account, go to Squarespace.com/Twig and use the offer code TWIG. And by Ford and the new Ford Fiesta. With an EPA estimated 40 highway miles per gallon, no other compact car is more fuel efficient. And fuel economy is just for starters. The 2011 Ford Fiesta. Ford invites you to drive one at a dealer near you. It's time for Twig This Week in Google and the cloud. Let's not forget, there is a cloud, a cloudy day today, but the sun is about to shine because here she is, Gina Trapani, back from Washington, D.C., where she fixed the government.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
In one fell swoop. In one day.
In one swell foop. Gina blogs at smarterware.org. She also works for Fast Company, fastcompany.com/worksmart. And are you working on another book?
I am not, but I am building ThinkUp for Expert Labs.
So that's exciting.
That's really my full-time thing.
She's writing in PHP these days.
Yes.
Forget English.
Code is poetry.
Code is art. Also here, there he is, Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com, from his book line study.
I'm trying to make you believe I've read any of them.
He buys them by the foot, ladies and gentlemen. He's also the author of the fine What Would Google Do? That's the book right there. Look right behind him. You can see it. And also with us, we have a newbie, so be kind, from Gizmodo.com. Joel Johnson is here. Hi, Joel.
Hi, how's it going?
What do you do for Gizmodo?
I am, at the moment, editor-at-large, which I think is just kind of like a blanket term for...
Retirement, right?
Yeah, out to pasture. Yeah, it was taken. No, I pretty much do feature stuff, but I still blog here and there, and yeah, so it's kind of all over the place.
That's awesome. Well, we're glad to have you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, for having me.
I wish I worked at Google. $1,000 bonus to every employee. That's worth about $20 million. And they all get a 10% raise. Kind of a little harder to figure out how much that is, but the guess is that could be worth, what, $20 billion? Well, 10% on a total cost basis of $20 billion is about $1 billion worth of raises, according to Business Insider at the Silicon Alley Insider. That's nice. Merry Christmas from Google.
Did it say please don't leave us in the memo? Please
don't
the check.
You read the confidential internal only memo. Boy, he said this like Googlers only, so I don't know how they got this memo. But basically, it implies we want to make sure that you feel rewarded for your hard work. And we want to attract the best people to Google. That it should say. I mean, you can continue on. Please don't leave. They are kind of... What is interesting is they say, we did a little research. We found out you valued cash more than stock options. So in effect, they're taking money out of the options and shoveling it over to $1,000. But I have to say, they've raised the bar for me here at Twit. Now I'm in trouble.
T-shirts.
I was going to give you all T-shirts.
Are we all going to get $1,000?
All of you, everybody on this podcast gets a 10% raise.
That's amazing.
But it is a reflection. You hit the nail on the head, didn't you, Gina? It is a reflection of the fact that there's a brain drain to Facebook.
Yeah, it is. It really kind of feels like a stop the bleeding move.
Is $1,000 enough to keep you from going to Facebook?
$1,000 is a nice, hey, you know, thanks. I mean, that's a nice little bonus. It's not enough to keep somebody from going to Facebook.
It's a bad Christmas party, huh?
They're going to have a big Christmas party, right? I hope.
I think it depends on how much you're making too, because those senior engineers or those mid-level engineers that they're really afraid of losing, I don't know if $1,000 is really all that much to them. But 10% could be pretty good.
10%, yeah, that's worth it. And actually, the stories we're hearing is if you go to your boss at Google and say, I'm leaving for Facebook, they will throw lots of money at you if they like you. They want to keep you if possible. Obviously, it's not been enough money for a number of senior engineers, but nevertheless. Google told TechCrunch that this is M.G. Siegler ready for TechCrunch. This is competitive compensation. Actually, it's funny because MG said, well, is this memo true? Google's response is, well, while we don't typically comment on internal matters, we believe that competitive compensation plans are important to the future of the company. Somebody in the comments said that's akin to saying, what did you have for breakfast? And responding, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. It's a non-answer. But I think I believe it.
Well, I wonder how many of those big hires Facebook got from Google were already rich.
Right. They already got the options. They already got
the stock.
They
weren't doing it for money to go to Facebook. And so no amount of money. You're stuck in a thousand is not enough. How much is enough?
Right.
Well, the whole thing is a little bit, it kind of feels a little pedestrian and it's sort of strange. I don't want to like besmirch $1 billion or whatever they're going to have to pay out in payroll. But the whole thing just kind of seems a little bit like, I don't know, just to do something company-wide doesn't seem, it doesn't give the kind of attitude that you would think Google wants to show their engineers that they're really progressive and doing something crazy.
So what does Gawker do?
Well, every time I've ever gone to Nick and said that I'm leaving for Facebook, he says, that's
fine. Boy,
yeah.
I think what Nick stops beating you up.
Right? All right, I won't hit you. I won't hit
Nick,
you again.
Nick lets you out of the basement.
Well, I just want everybody at Twit to know you're all getting a pair of socks hand knit by my mother.
It's sweet, actually. My heat is off in the house, so I need.
Oh, you look cold. You got like eight layers on, dude. What's going on?
We moved into a house that heats with heating oil, which I didn't know they did outside of like Ireland or something. So I'm waiting for a truck to come around and pour oil into a tank in my garage.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Heating oil. When I lived in New England, I'm sure, Jeff, you know this experience. The truck comes, they pump oil once a month. They pump oil into a big tank in your house.
In my first apartment, I'd lived there for 6 months. And one night I decided I wanted popcorn. And I got absolutely enraged that the stove didn't work. And I called the gas company in an absolute fit. And they told me, you have to call to get it hooked up, sir. 6 months, I'd never bothered.
Never cooked a thing.
Not a thing.
What? You need to have gas? Anybody got a Samsung Galaxy Tab? I think today's the day.
Well, we got one. I haven't actually used it to be completely.
Oh, go ahead, make judgments anyway.
Yeah, we don't need to. We don't need to. You do what Dvorak does. Dvorak will look at the box and say, "No, I can tell you right now."
That's my Dvorak impression, by the way.
It's not good. I don't like it.
Set it up. So Matt Buchanan, one of our senior guys, had just put up his review. And, there have been some other reviews out there before. It's not like we're the first ones to put anything out there. But Matt pretty much said it's garbage. In fairness, there's a lot of things it seems like they're doing right. But the fundamental size issue, like the 7-inch tablet, seems like it's just not like really a good size. You've got phones, which are a certain size, and they're pocketable, and you're always going to take that around. And you've got the iPad, which is less convenient, but it's a 9.7-inch screen. But this 7-inch size is just a weird in-between size, and it could be that maybe Jobs is right that nobody really wants a 7-inch screen.
Interesting. T-Mobile the first to have it, but Sprint tells me that they'll have it Sunday, and I'm supposedly
anybody
getting
Wi-Fi only yet? No.
That's what you're holding out for. No, they're all 3G.
I'm not paying another darn handcuffs on me.
Sprint's going to have two data plans, a 2 gigabyte with unlimited messaging, $30 a month, 5 gigabytes with unlimited messaging, $60 a month. I imagine T-Mobile somewhere in there, although T-Mobile tends to be a little more competitive.
Nowadays you can get Virgin's MiFi.
I know, that's a good deal.
Phone for $25 unlimited, right. So why pay them for the contract? Just MiFi it.
Because it doesn't have Wi-Fi. Now you know why. Because of people like you. And by the way, that Virgin is Sprint. They own Virgin Mobile. So I think
what or just Virgin uses
no Sprint. They no initially it was Virgin uses the Sprint network. A couple of years ago they bought it outright. I think the reason you're getting that cut rate on a MiFi from Virgin, it's $20 less than the parent company, is because they're moving to 4G. They want everybody, they kind of want to clear out the 3G units. I don't know. I mean, they'd like you to buy. They do make an overdrive now that is dual 3G, 4G, and I think that that's the reason they're saying, well, we'd like to sell that at the Sprint stores.
Yeah, I just got a test unit of the Clearwire one, the 4G, which I haven't used yet in New York. Not, unfortunately, it's not a MiFi. It's a dongle, but.
Do you have 4G in Portland, Joel?
Yeah, there is 4G up here, and I don't really. I mean, I've played around it with 4G everything at whenever it's set up, but I just use good old 3G at home. But yeah, Portland was one of the first test markets, actually.
Right, that's what I thought. Yeah, you were. That's the first place they put Clearwire.
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk when it first came out that just like Wi-Fi and everything before it, that we'll replace ISPs with it, and we won't have to use wires anymore. But just from anecdotal experience, like I don't know anybody using it like that. So people are just kind of using it like slightly better 3G.
Right. T-Mobile says the Galaxy Tab will be $399 with a 2-year contract. Or $5.99 with no contract to get a plan, $25 a month for 200 megabytes of data. That's more like the AT&T pricing. And then for $40 a month, you get 5 gigabytes. So I think if you're a heavy data user, the 40 is better than 60 on Sprint. So T-Mobile, but then you should really check the area because some areas T-Mobile has this HSPA Plus, which is actually pretty fast.
I just can't imagine using a tablet or something like that for 2 years. Like I what an Android tablet is going to look like 2 years from now or a year from now.
Really good point.
Yeah, it's
like,
true.
I buy tons of stuff, but I always sell it really quickly too. I just bought a new Air, so I'm selling my iPad, but I'll probably get another iPad. And, it's like this whole cycle, and I don't mind paying service fees for connectivity, 3G or whatever from the companies if I have to. But I don't want to sign contracts for every single gadget that I own. That's just so silly.
Yeah, no, I agree. And boy, so what did your reviewer not like about the Galaxy Tab? Was it that the Android didn't scale? Besides the fact that the 7 inches is the wrong size, was it how did the Android look? Did it scale well to 7 inches? That'd be my concern.
Yeah, actually, so you know how like when you have an iPad and you're using iPhone apps on an iPad,
yeah.
You scale
up
and they look horrible, and nobody does that.
Yeah.
So apparently, on the Tab, on a 7-inch screen, taking an Android app and scaling it up is not it looks a lot better because the screen isn't that much bigger. But that's kind of like the core of his negativity about the size is like if you scale it up and it doesn't really change the way you use it that much. Why bother? Like, why bother having this whole extra device?
Right.
I think a lot of the criticisms too, though, this is typical Android problem, which is if you're operating outside of the Google experience, like whatever their core Android distro is, it's always a crapshoot on how good the manufacturers are going to tweak it. And also, this is the first real implementation outside of third-party Chinese crap vendors who are making a proper tablet. So, I mean, I feel like if you're really hardcore into Android, again, not having used it, like I don't think this is any indication that Android's going to be a bad platform for tablets, and it'll probably get a lot better really quickly. But it just seems like maybe this hardware isn't quite what people want.
Looks like T-Mobile anyway is pushing entertainment. They're pushing the Kindle app, movies. Music, they see this as an entertainment, kind of like an Arcos.
Well, I think it's what everybody's pushed with tablets, even Apple. Like Apple will talk about productivity and all of that stuff, but like if you, I see most people using iPads in public on planes, reading things, like consuming stuff, and not to get into the whole what is an iPad for argument. But I think the reason that you see Amazon advertising the Kindle against the iPad, or like this, the BlackBerry tablet that's coming out is going to have, you know, is very entertainment focused for RIM. It's incredibly entertainment focused.
Playbook.
I think, yeah, the Playbook. Like, I just think that that's what people, as a gift and at this price point and at this like dollar amount, like this is what people are. It's easier just to say to people, this is going to be for watching movies and playing games and reading books than, you know, well, it's like a netbook, but it's not quite, and it has these limitations. And so, yeah, it's definitely like a, all these media players that for years we've been trying to get to take off, Arcos and that whole PMP Windows stuff years ago, like these tablets, for all the extra capability they have, that's still a lot of their core use.
How about the Google apps themselves? I wonder how they look on it. Because that, I mean, my real goal for it would be to, yes, watch entertainment, do email, you know, and do the, you know, read the Times, do that kind of stuff. I'm not a game player, so it's not really going to matter to me.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I like games on the iPad and the iPhone, but yeah, it's got to have, most of the people I know who use the iPad use it as a productivity tool as much as anything else.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I definitely do too, but I also feel like geeky use of iPads is maybe not the best, is maybe not indicative of the way most people are using
iPads. Yeah,
that's
probably true.
But I also think it's going to change a little bit too. Like, you have to give these products time to expand and grow, and you have to give mainstream audiences time to understand what they even own. So I think, like you had with the iPhone, and I don't think this was all a grand plan by Apple, but one of the brilliant things about the iPhone was that it came out and it had a few things that it was better at doing, like browsing the web and just kind of the general interface, but it couldn't do a lot of other stuff. And Apple is really good at kind of like doling out a little more capability and a little more capability as you go forward, and teaching the audience what they can do. And so I think productivity on all these tablets is going to be secondary, you know, as people go, hey, I brought this so I can watch movies, but I'm going to try to edit a spreadsheet and maybe this won't suck.
That's always what it looked like. The iPad looked like its success was that it filled a lot of niches.
And yeah, it's not good at anything.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I'd say that. I mean, it's good. It's great. It's great for watching movies. It's great for, it's actually pretty good for reading. You're right. It's not as good as the Kindle.
It's not, you know, it's better to watch on a TV than an iPad. And I love the iPad. I think it's a great platform, but that's.
Well, if you were going to buy, Joel, if you were going to buy a device other than a phone, well, that's even the wrong way to say it. If you were going to buy an iPad, given the current choices, do you think you'd go for the 7-inch Android or Dell's 5-inch Android?
Oh, gosh. Well,
Dell's is a joke. Wait, look at that ad. Have you seen the Dell Streak ad? It looks like they're holding something that's swole up. It's just wrong. It's like a big candy bar, like they're holding a Hershey bar. It's just terrible.
But it's funny that you say that, because it's still smaller than, you know, in
well,
some
but,
dimensions.
But it's smaller than the iPad, too. So there's a, but what I'm saying is that it's almost like Uncanny Valley. There's an area between two decent areas, which is a phone. You know, the 4.3 is as big as you can get, right? The Droid X or the Evo.
Right.
Yeah.
And the iPad, which is the right size for the iPad. And there's this, those two work.
Well, the thing to me, and this is, you know, tenuously about Google, but I do think there's, when I hold an iPad and I use it, I feel like it's right on the edge of being too small. Like, there's times where I'm like, oh, I wish this was just a little bit bigger.
Really?
But I also don't want it to be bigger because I want it to be portable and to carry it around and all of that stuff. So I think a lot of the magic in any device screen size is finding where that like point of tension is, where it's like, okay, I wish it was a little bit bigger, but I'm glad it's no bigger. And the iPhone does that very well. And the iPad does that very well. And all of these other explorations of screen sizes, I don't think there's a magic number, but I think there's probably a magic zone that Apple's probably somewhere within, and there's not a lot of room to play there.
Yeah, so Steve was right. Steve was right.
Gina, are you tempted by any of these tablets yet?
No, not yet. It's gonna be a while. They gotta work it out. I'm not gonna be tempted until Google says this is the right version of Android to run on a tablet.
Well, you know what they're saying now, and we're 3.0 is imminent, right? For Gingerbread.
Yeah.
Although somebody said 2.3 is coming out soon too. I'm very confused. So there's 2.3, maybe an interim thing, then Gingerbread, because they already got the Gingerbread Man. But it turns out that it's Honeycomb, really, is what you want. I'm very confused. Google's message is not clear.
It isn't. And this is an Android problem.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think it's hurting them, though.
Well, I mean, they're selling a lot of phones. God knows.
At some point, it becomes a generic device. I think is that yes, there's the magic to the iPhone, fine, and the iPad. But then beyond that, I went to the Quadrangle Foursquare conference.
Just real quickly. Yeah. Look at the phone in her hand. They need to hire. This is the Dell Streak ad. They need to hire models with bigger hands. Yeah, they got to do it. We talked about this on
basketball players. Yeah,
because look at that. Just does it looks? There's something just not right about it. It's like, look how big that is. I don't know.
She carries it well, though.
She carries it well. And then he's got one. And look, they both have weird chocolate bars in their hands. It's just
they're meant for each other.
Yeah. Oh, you're one of the three other people who have this phone. We must be true love. So that's the Dell Streak. That's a 5-incher. 7-inch is not quite right. Part of this also is really the operating system and apps have to. This is what Steve actually said in that earnings call. He said, it's a developer issue. They're not thinking like developers. They're thinking like hardware manufacturers. We can make it. What he says, but we're software guys. We think, yeah, but how's it going to look? And can you make software that fits on a 3.5, 4, 5, 7 and up screen that works in all of them?
It's also, though, pocket size, right? I think that the Streak is the largest possible thing that will fit least a man's pocket.
Will it fit in your pocket?
It'll fit in my jacket pocket.
Your coat pocket. But you know what?
Yeah.
Jeff, you're the last man who still wears a jacket. If it doesn't
fit in my ironic overalls front pocket. So.
Oshkosh bagosh. There you go. But no, I think it has to fit in the breast pocket of your shirt, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's uncomfortable. Who even puts a phone in the breast pocket of their... Like, phones are for pockets at best. And maybe belt clips if you must.
Well, he got rid of his pocket protector, so just don't make fun of him.
Well, you're telling me that you think it's superior to have a belt carrier than and have it in your front pocket?
Hip pocket, like thigh pocket.
Hip pocket, no, because, well, I have keys in one and wallet in the other, and I don't want to sit on it, so I can't put it in my butt pocket. So it's got to go in the front. And really, am I nerdy for putting my phone there?
I don't think you're supposed to put anything in your front pockets. I think, except for... handkerchiefs is like the only thing that is possibly supposed to go in there.
You want to know the real truth? Half the time I got two phones in my front pocket.
Yeah.
Well, we're all outliers, you know? Like, if you've ever looked at a Scott E-vest and been like, well, maybe, then you're like really fashionist.
Joel, that's all I own. This is a Scott E-vest shirt.
I like Scott E-vest stuff, but I'm just saying, if you're at that point where you're looking for cable runs in your shirt, like, you can kind of work within.
That's why I keep it in my front pocket, because I have a hole there that can go right up through here to the headphones that go around my back, and it's... Never mind.
All I'm saying is you're part of the problem.
I just feel that it camouflages my man boobs.
And not accentuate
you take on geek boobs.
Oh, it might accentuate them. I never thought of that, Gina.
Well, that's the thing. It accentuates just ones. You're like, you know, you've got the, like, pretty boob.
Something really wrong with me.
This really has changed my entire perspective on it. So I'd like to rescind everything I said before.
No, you were right. They're agreeing with you. Don't put it in your breast pocket.
Well, and I think to get back to the size of things, like, it's you're never going to put an iPad in your pocket, which means it might be the right size, you know? And all these other tablets, anytime they show... This is so typical. I mean, I've seen it hundreds of times over the years as a gadget blogger. It's like, they'll show you these model pictures of people using it, and it has absolutely no relevance to the real world. So you have to actually look out in the real world and see what people would do with it. Or what I often do is take stuff and show my friends, like at a bar or something, and say, like, what would you do with this? And if they wouldn't put it in their pocket, then, you know, it's not, nobody else is going.
We're talking about Android, some Android sales numbers out. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Gina's got a, but you haven't set it up yet, the Google TV.
Not yet. I haven't received it yet.
I have mine. I've talked about it already a little bit.
Yeah.
Unhook it, Leo.
You kind of ruined me.
You know, I'm really tempted to unhook it, but I'm going to wait until Gina. You know, we'll talk about it in a second. There is a deal. Have you seen this? This is the new Windows mobile phone.
I saw you showing it off.
I was watching your demo a little bit before
Windows,
the show.
It's mobile. You know, it's sad.
It's
because
slidey.
It's actually very snappy. Had this come out before the iPhone and the Android phone, you'd be going, this is amazing.
Would that have come out before Android and iPhone?
Oh, well, I guess not.
Not in that way.
I guess not.
But you like it.
Well, it's fine, but we already have Android and iPhone and BlackBerry, if you want to be really generous. And
is there any logic to it? How's the UI? Is there
it's fine. I love it. Yeah, you know, it's a nice UI. It's very usable. It's very I'll tell you what. There's a lesson for Google in a couple of areas. First of all, because Microsoft said this is the hardware spec and you must adhere to the hardware spec, all of them have the same 5-megapixel camera, the same gigahertz processor. There is a varied amount of RAM and storage, but essentially you're getting an 800 by 480 screen. There's a certain consistency across the hardware that is a good thing, and that's one of the problems Android has. But, of course, Android's open. You know, I was thinking about this morning. Google, of course, knew that that would be an issue, but they chose, from a philosophical point of view, we prefer to open source it, to keep the Open Handset Alliance, to let the manufacturers do what they want with it, because it's worked for them. We're going to talk about those numbers in a bit. But on the other hand, I think Microsoft can quite reasonably say, yes, but look, this is a very consistent experience across the board. This is the Samsung Focus, which is very much like the Captivate, the Galaxy S that Samsung has Android on. So just think of it kind of as a Galaxy S.
Are you taking Pilates?
Yeah, every three times a week. You should see my core. I'm working on my, it's all about the man boobs. So so these are the tiles, you see, and you can have your friends in the, you know, you can have these, everybody has a tile. It's very people focused and socially focused. So you see how quickly that works though? So you can see, I mean, these are recent calls.
Gina, I don't see us there. We don't have tiles.
Well, you would have a tile if you would tweet or Facebook more often. Actually, I think you're on here somewhere, Jeff, because I think you Facebooked recently. These are Facebook posts. It's very social. Like, even if you go to the camera app, this was a little disconcerting at first because it's not just my pictures. It's other people's pictures too show up in the camera app. So all my friends' kit pictures are showing up here as well.
Those look pretty nice.
It's very pretty. I mean, that background is randomly chosen from my photos. I mean, they've done a nice job with this. It's a very good camera, by the way. It's a 5-megapixel, very comparable to the iPhone. The detail and the accuracy, I think, are very good. So this is a great phone, but
if they stick with it, like if they actually follow through, which has been Microsoft's problem in devices for the last few years, they've got a great start. Like, I think they'll end up selling quite a few.
They've only sold 40, according to some reports, 40,000. And I have to say, when I went in to buy this, I was the only one. I thought I was buying an iPhone. I don't know. I went half an hour before the store opened. It was kind of quiet. There was, like, nobody. And then they opened the door, and I'm the one guy standing in front. I can remember waiting in line at this AT&T store 3 years in a row for an iPhone where there's, you know, crowds. And the big deal, they're opening the door. They're opening the door. Guy says, yeah, come on in. I'm here to buy a Focus.
But it's not going to be a big consumer. It's not going to have.
Do you know how many they had, Joel, in stock? Two.
A lot?
Two.
Oh, like that's all they had actually gotten in to begin with?
They had two. So when you hear T-Mobile said, we're sold out of the HD7, you might ask, and how many was that?
But that's okay. How many G1s were sold 3 years ago?
Oh, and this is better than the G1. This is infinitely better than the G1.
These will be sold through like channel partnerships, right. You know, these aren't going to happen in the same kind of consumer way. And if they end up nailing some of like the Xbox integration and stuff like that,
nail the Xbox integration. It's fantastic.
Yeah, but extending it so that it becomes like if you have an Xbox, that it's almost essential that you have a Windows 7 phone.
There's me. That's my little Meeble.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And my achievements go right to the Xbox. Some of these games can round trip from the Xbox.
And also don't forget that, you know, Kotaku this week had a all but confirmation, not to plug a bunch of other Gawker sites, especially Kotaku, which is horrible. Just kidding. don't get me in trouble. But like Microsoft's confirmed to both me and Kotaku that without confirming that their Kinect technology is coming to their phones.
So you could wave at the phone.
Yeah, so eventually these phones are going to end up being little Kinect projectors too, and that's pretty amazing. Like that gives them a hook that Apple, you know, is working on clearly from the acquisitions and patents and such.
This doesn't have the voice everywhere that Android has, but it's pretty. You know, it's close. This week in Google, let's see. You know, it's pretty decent. I mean, So that's Bing. I think I was saying other things, so it didn't. It only heard the Google. But, you know, I mean, it does. It's actually not a bad phone. It syncs, by the way, with my Google accounts, although you have to. It's a little non-intuitive. You have to choose Outlook to sync to the Google accounts. But once you do, because it's using EAS, but once you do, all my stuff Google propagated over, as well as Facebook and Twitter and everything. So,
is this going to be the phone that sort of big companies with IT departments based, yes, like heavily in Exchange are going to want? I mean, is this going to be the phone that they feel comfortable with? I mean, I feel like Xbox and Exchange /Outlook are, you know, kind of are the two big hooks here.
It's a very consumer-y phone, though, I got to tell you. I mean, it's not a businessy phone. It's not a BlackBerry, you know?
Yeah, but everybody, all those consumer or all those business phones are moving in a consumer direction. And think how many times, you know, a couple of years ago you were hearing complaints from sysadmins saying, you know, we've got all these execs wanting iPhones on our network and how do we integrate all that? And, you know, all the phones are moving together. I don't think there's going to be a big difference between business and consumer phones.
And I guess in a way that's the point, is that this looks very much this. I mean, it's unique, and they were smart to do the tiles because you look at it and you immediately know it's a Windows phone. But it's very much influenced by Android and iPhone. And you know, it's basically the same hardware as everybody else is doing. I kind of like it. It's just not...
To their credit, the thing that all the hardware and all the phones in the world right now are you know, except for things in the periphery, are pretty much the same.
Right.
So the only thing that's really differentiating things is UI and is design.
Right.
And the fact that Microsoft is taking, I mean, they're leading in some ways. They're going in a different direction than Apple, which Google did not do at all. Android, for as much as it's done right, is pretty much, you know, a feature for feature clone of iOS. And, you know, I think it's surprising that Microsoft is the one that's gone in that direction.
Right.
But devices, EMD has always been that group within Microsoft that's been willing to take those risks.
This feels much less geeky. This, I can see why they might and have pitched this at feature phone owners, you know, and non-geeks. I mean, it would be a logical upgrade for somebody with a feature phone who is scared of the complexity of smartphones, particularly of Android. This is very, I've given it to a number of people and said, can you figure it out? No trouble. I mean, it's very easy, and it feels...
To this day, Android, though I love them, will throw me once in a while. I'll miss the logic of something.
Yeah. Well, we know that. We know that about you. And this has things that Apple does not have that are very nice in Android. A back button. A search button. It has you press and hold to do, you know, kind of like the right-click style contextual stuff. All of that is intuitive, I think, and really is not there. And in fact, when I go back to an iPhone from an Android phone, I really miss the back button. It's like, I just want to do what I was doing a second ago. What, I got to exit out? I got to go dee-dee-dee-ba-dee-ba-dee-dee-dee.
What are notifications like on the Windows phone?
Notifications are very much like Android. You can really see how they've kind of cross-pollinated. They come in at the top in a bar here. There isn't a pull-down thing. You have to tap it.
Mm.
But it I think it's better than iPhone, although it's a little more modal than Android. It's not. Android still is the winner on notifications, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. That is the one thing that Google has just dominated, I think. And I'm shocked that iOS does not have anything even close to it.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and I hear, you know, you hear Apple people.
Shh.
They say things like John Gruber will say things. Well, it's just better. And I'll say, well, feature by feature, what is? No, it just feels better. I just like it better. It's more aesthetic.
The pixels are aligned perfectly.
It's like, no, but what's the feature? No, you don't understand. It's not about features. It's about fit and finish.
It's about all of those things, though. It can be about all those things.
But that's very subjective. And to say this phone is better because of my subjective opinion that it has a better feel is not, it's not an argument. It's just...
Well, welcome to gadget reviewing.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, that's basically, first of all, I think it's totally fair to say that something has a feel, and you can quantify what feel is, if it's precision, if it's responsiveness, you know, and the iPhone and the iOS stuff does, you saw everybody, I think, or all the geeks saw the touchscreen grid test where they showed how the iOS devices were more accurate than, you know, Android, which was slightly more accurate.
You know,
than other things.
I've been around a lot. I'm older than you, Joel. I remember when people said the same thing about Windows and mousing. Oh, the Mac mouse is direct drive. The Windows mouse isn't. It's just not quite the same. It's, you know what? Give me a break. That's why Windows and Mac just completely just slaughtered Windows in the marketplace.
Well, the problem is an aesthetic argument doesn't guarantee sales.
Like, not only does it not guarantee sales, it doesn't resonate with anybody. It's an elitist argument. It just feels better. My Mercedes just drives better.
It obviously resonates with, you know, 100 million iOS users.
Let's talk about sales in just a second. I've been meaning to take a break, but we will get to those numbers in just a second. Before I do, though, I have to tell you about a great company called Citrix that just feels better. It is actually, Citrix is kind of like the Mercedes of remote access. If you know the name Citrix, you know, you're working in enterprise, you know all about Citrix. And the consumer products are just as good and really easy to use. I'm going to give you an example. Go to Assist Express, which is their support product. Now, look, you're a geek. You know a little bit about support. In fact, I know a lot of people who listen are in IT or support software. But all of us, at least, at the very least, support family and friends. This is a program you will like. Now, if you do it occasionally, they do have a day pass. But this is really aimed at the professional support person. And the monthly fee is so affordable, and it means you can have unlimited support sessions. You can even have 8 going on at any one time. So you could start an install or a scan on one machine, move to the next. So it's very efficient with your time. Unattended support. But best of all, the people you're supporting don't have to have it installed ahead of time. All you have to do is send them a link. They click the link. 30 seconds later, you're in fixing their system. I want you to try GoTo Assist Express free for 30 days. I've been using it for more than 10 years, and it's better and better and better. I can go on and on about the great features. You know, the GoTo Assist Express users say they get, this is a recent study, 40% increase in productivity by using GoTo Assist Express. And I believe it because I see how fast and easy it is to use. I just use it with family and friends. If you're a pro, you're going to love it. Try it right now by going to gotoassist.com/twig, T-W-I-G. gotoassist.com/twig. 30 days, absolutely free. It is the best remote support product out there, period. But you don't have to take my word for it. Try it free for 30 days. Android smartphone sales top 20 million. 20 million in the third quarter alone, 44% of the market. Now, we always say how big Nokia is in this. Only 29.5 million. So while Nokia's doing well, Symbian's doing well, is still the best-selling worldwide. Android is coming on strong. It's not hard to imagine a quarter or two from now, Android being easily the best-selling.
And that answers your earlier question about not sticking to one size and one spec.
Yeah, that does, doesn't it? Google made the right choice.
Yeah.
They made the right choice if they want to have their OS on the most devices.
Well, and if you're Google, that's what you want, right?
Yeah, in theory, I'm still, you know, a little iffy on how much revenue they're actually bringing in from those mobile devices. But maybe it's just about getting the groundwork out there and, you know, doing something.
Oh, absolutely.
With it.
There's just tons of value that's going to come back in terms of advertising opportunities, data back, and all kinds of things. Schmidt has said, he said last January, that, you know, he and she who has the most installs will have the most developers, will get the best apps, right. and around that virtuous cycle goes.
Well, there's a really important point with the Windows phone. The key for Microsoft, they know it, is developers.
Yeah.
They've got to get apps on here. They have actually quite a good set of original apps, but they need to get the key apps like Evernote and so forth. And if they don't, I'm not going to switch because I need my apps. Gartner Group says that Symbian will continue to outsell Android, at least in the next quarter, due to pricing. It's interesting. The total number of smartphones, according to Gartner, I think Gartner's pretty good on this, is 81 million units worldwide in the third quarter. But that's still only 20% of all phones sold. So the market has lots of room to grow. Android in the second place spot with 20.5 million. 1 year ago, take a guess. Are these your numbers,
nope.
Jeff? Okay.
Nope.
Take a guess. They got 20 million in the last quarter. The quarter a year ago.
Two?
Yeah, 1.4 million. Yeah. To go from 1.4 to 20 million in just a year. Their share of the worldwide smartphone market, 25%.
You know, that's all, I hate to bring it up, Gina, because I know every time we do, it's like a stab to your solar plexus.
You're not going to bring up Wave again, are you?
Yeah, I am. Because it does explain why something like Wave can be seen as a failure to kill when you see that's the hockey stick standard
they
have.
That's the kill, yeah.
Right.
I bemoan that a little bit, though. That's public companies in this tech industry have to do that.
I agree.
And I don't think that that's a if I had to double my, or whatever that is, it's not even doubling. If I had 20 times sales every year, I wouldn't be around. What company can do? It's very few companies can sustain that.
Yeah,
it's true.
But I understand that the Wall Street expects it in the tech industry. But don't you think there'd be a lot of great companies out there that only grew 10% or 20% a year?
It's an interesting thing in the news business is people are talking about creating, the low profit company. And I didn't fully understand that till I looked at Craigslist.
There's a great example.
Well, because it's a choice, and is he not operating under its fiduciary responsibility to its shareholders, that is eBay, and that becomes the fight. So you kind of need permission to be low profit, but that strikes me silly. My students come in my class and say, I want to be not for profit, and I say, no, I'm going to turn you into a greedy bastard, and sustainability and profit are good. But I get it, Leo. I think you're right. There's not a middle ground. There's not a way, Google's success does give it some freedom, but also becomes imprisonment for them.
Imprisonment how?
Because imprisonment, they have to grow.
You think they have to do that again next year?
Yeah.
That's hard. Yeah. That's really hard.
Eric says the biggest challenge they have is growth, and it's the double-edged sword. Right, grow this much, you have to keep growing that much. It's really hard to grow that much when you've already grown that much.
Well, you have to enter new markets. So Google entered the cell phone market because you couldn't grow search at that rate. So they entered the cell phone market, and they were able to do that. But then it can't be in this. I mean, you're not going to grow another 20 times
in
the cell phone
B
market.
And then B is then you get worse and worse and worse at right hand meet left hand. Chrome and meet Android. And how does all that work? And that becomes harder and harder and harder, and that has been a lot of Google's problem lately. So size is its own enemy.
Gartner also says component shortages are more likely to hit Android than Symbian. I would imagine iPhone as well. Things like those these screens. I know these Super AMOLED screens are in great short supply. NAND, memory, flash, that kind of stuff. So you could see that you might not be able to grow this market just because you can't.
Well, the next market for Android has to be feature phones in developing countries. Like the reason Nokia even exists still in any form is not because of the smartphone stuff. So ignore all the smartphone Symbian stuff. It's all of these handsets they're selling to India and maybe China less. I don't know in China specifically, but they're selling developing economy phones. And so if the materials cost for these older smartphones, especially Android phones, could get down low enough, and there could be like a local company that localizes the interfaces and things like that, it's entirely possible that Android could come in and start chewing through the feature phone market in India. And if you do that, then all of a sudden you have hundreds of millions of units a year open that isn't even the smartphone market necessarily.
Right. That's interesting. I would never have thought the feature phone market would be desirable, but that's us geeks again saying, well, why would you want a feature phone?
Well, I think the idea, an idea is that the division between feature phone and smartphone is really goofy.
Sure. It's not really a feature phone. It's like a less smartphone, phone, a phone you can text, tweet, maybe.
Yes.
We kind of used to say like a smartphone was a phone you could put apps on or, before there were even apps, but, something where you could put software on it and that made it a smartphone. But then you got like Mossberg calling things super smartphones and the whole thing is silly. Like it really at this point comes down to cost almost than anything else. Like, is it a cheap phone that gets like a crazy long battery life and is durable and local people can fix and support? Like that might be an iPhone, that might be an Android phone, but it's like it's external factors at this point.
Kevin, there was a news story last week about just that. I can't remember who it was. I'm looking it up now, not finding it. That said that there was development effort. It's like it's the holy grail, like Negroponte's $100 laptop.
Ah, yeah.
Right?
It's and those projects have always been ridiculous. Like, I mean, no offense to Negroponte, who I have a lot of respect for for other things he's done. Like the $100 laptop idea is so silly because you're basically creating a whole new market that doesn't even really reflect what the existing markets reflect in those places. Like if you look at Africa, like the most common scenario in, and you know, Africa is a big thing to generalize, but you have a lot of people just using like one phone in a village, you know, of 50 people or whatever, and trying to do like these one laptop per child projects that have no greater infrastructure within capitalism is a really weird way to try to distribute that stuff. I think it's a lot more likely that
you're right. And the next 3 billion people who are going to come on the internet are going to come on through phones, they say.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And the better phone that we can put out there, the more connectivity they have, the more they'll be able to learn, the more they'll be able to do transactions and economics, the more they'll be able to do all kinds of things.
And the beautiful thing about Android is, for as much as it frustrates me that it fragments, just like, you know, all these open source operating systems do, like all it's going to take is one person in those local markets who knows better than any of the Western companies what they need to take that baseline of Android and do it. And then all of a sudden that could be another, you know, millions and millions of customers for Google that they didn't even know they were going
to
get.
Right. And Joel, the other key to this is that we tend to think one phone per person or two phones per person and our, you know, I mean, five phones per person for us. And instead what it is multiple people per phone. And I saw a story again, I can't find it right now, but an entrepreneur in developing world was creating the infrastructure to be able to have multiple accounts on one phone. So I go
that only lasts for a while.
It's transitional, but we want the transition. The transition is good.
Yeah.
And if they distribute these phones with Google Voice built in, they're you know, providing the service to text and to call too, which is just a kind of more opportunities
that's
for contextual advertising.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Google Voice might be the killer app for a feature phone.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And carriers like it because they do a lot of infrastructure stuff like voicemail you don't have to do now. Moving along. Let's see. We did the Galaxy. We did the... how about... now that you're getting your Google TV, more blockage.
And more stuff I can't get on it.
More stuff you can't get on it. Now, in fact, sci-fi. Why would sci-fi block the freaking Google TV? Come on, dudes. I'm sorry. Is it sci-fi? S-Y-F-Y. I know it's sci-fi. And Fancast.com, backdoor, Fancast is the Comcast Xfinity thing, was a backdoor to Hulu. I actually was using that because I can get a lot of the Hulu shows that way. Apparently that's been blocked.
I think you're going to just keep seeing this forever. Like there's never been an industry like the content industry that loves to fight, you know, like the video content.
Is
industry.
That a problem for Google TV?
I think what happens is this. I went to the Quadrangle Foursquare conference today, which has no relationship to the Foursquare we know and love.
Oh.
And it's a bunch of CEOs in the audience, and it's all off the record, but nothing of note is said because they're all public companies. And Tim Armstrong and Michael Eisner announced a deal today in which Eisner, you know, who knows his crap about making entertainment, is going to make some stuff that will have an exclusive period on AOL, marry distribution and content. And so I asked... you know, are we now at the tipping point where we see something major come and make the internet work as a entertainment medium? Is that, you know, are we going to find Howard Stern as he's threatened to go to the internet? Are we going to find the next Modern Family kind of brand works on the internet? And you know, they said yeah because they want it to be that case. But I think when that happens, you start to see the unbundling and unraveling of TV, that a channel is a level of curation that we needed in the past, you know, like a newspaper, that the need of which goes away because you're going to find stuff wherever. And, of course, Google becomes the mechanism to be that new curatorial level, and channels are what it's only part of the process of killing them. Someone else... at this thing said, a big executive said, when asked about various media, said that broadcast channels are toast. The fact that Fox and cable they fought for a week and you know, the government is stepping in here in a very non-market way. This whole idea of retransmission fees is a false propping up of the old channel.
This is the FCC's requirement. What goes along with must carry, right?
That but you can either demand carriage or demand money.
Right.
And if you're Fox carrying the World Series, then you demand money. And Cablevision tried to negotiate and finally did cave. But I still think this is the beginning of the end for the channels, because they're all going to get carriage. CBS now brags that they're depending on carriage fees as much as advertising. Where does that money come from? Us! So we're going to pay more for our cable, for more channels we don't want. It's going to hit a big bad point. And then out of nowhere, some big brand is going to, Eisner is going to create a hit. It's a hit on AOL.
We keep waiting for that to happen with the Guild and with Dr. Horrible. And if Felicia Day's not in it, I guess it's got no hope. But we keep waiting for somebody to do that.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be, but I think that, but Leo, it's you too. I mean, I think.
Well, yeah, and this is different. So that's episodic television or episodic content. And then we also talk about news content. I think that that's going to happen first. I mean, the stuff that we're doing on Twit, for instance, is much easier to move to that from CNN or from that. That's a natural. A little harder for episodic television.
It is. So something, or again, it could be a personality like Stern.
Reality. It's reality
it
shows.
Could be
are
reality,
cheap.
Absolutely. So something's going to break here. And when that happens, well, you're going to find it, obviously, through digital first. There may be, some of the guys said at this conference today, an aftermarket for that on a cable channel or a broadcast channel. But its first release is going to be the internet. And so when that happens, the whole need to have channels pretty much goes away. And so what you're seeing are the death throes of the old channel structure. Now, last piece of this, though, is that so Cablevision tried to basically unbundle Fox. It basically said, hey, folks, go watch Glee. Uh-oh, we mentioned Glee again on the internet. Don't watch it on Fox because we don't want to pay them this money. And of course, it didn't happen, but that's where they're going. But the problem for Cablevision was they've got to unbundle themselves first. They forced me to buy all these channels I don't want. Is worse than forcing me to get all these shows I don't want and pay for now on Fox. And so there's a tipping point that's waiting to happen, and they're going to resist for a long time. The cable networks will benefit from this new world, but it's going to be a painful transition. The channels will not benefit, and they'll die. And we'll have a new world of TV, but it's going to be a really ugly transition, just like the transition of news and newspapers. Sorry for the...
No, I think that this is... It's very interesting, and you know, everybody's trying to figure out how this is going to play. And somebody said in the chat room, and I think this is absolutely true, still people, 90% of people watch TV on TV. And...
Yeah, I think the death of television is pretty, you know, exaggerated. Like... The guy can dream, can't he? I mean, you know.
No, but I think that you're going to see you're seeing the cracks in it, though, aren't you?
Yeah, we've been seeing the cracks for 15 years.
Don't be impatient. These things take time. In the words of the Wicked Witch of the West, these things take time.
We all work online and make our living because the internet, and we're all in our way, you know, geeky internet people. But like, there's still huge content industries. The lion's share of that stuff is being produced through the old media structures, and they do tons of stupid stuff, don't get me wrong, but like, they still have a lot of clout, and they creatively are still where a lot of people end up going. So you know, Joss Whedon has a great success with Dr. Horrible, but that didn't stop him from going on and making Dollhouse, you know, like, right. Just because some of these are successful.
No, in fact, he did Dr. Horrible during the strike because, you know, it was just something to do. Dollhouse is where his money is.
I have a dream that Nick Denton, my friend Nick, your friend Nick, our friend Nick.
He's not my friend Nick.
Well, the rest of the three of us.
I never met him. I don't know. Yeah.
Welts on our backs. that is someone like him, right? A talent like Nick can come up with a new concept of reality TV, let's say, and celebrity TV, and the new TMZ TV doesn't appear on a channel. It appears here because he loves the independence of it. That he can make something good enough for TV, but he's going to make it cheap. He's going to make it different. He's going to make it for TV, and it's going to work as a business, just like Twit, right? Twit is not going to be as big as CNN was, but Twit's profitable, right, Leo?
Oh, yeah. Oh, but yeah, but it's, I mean, it's a dinky compared to...
That, but that's the new future. The effort to make blockbusters will always be possible, but they will become ever and ever and ever harder to make.
Yeah. And because of the internet, cheap internet distribution and cheap means of production, you could see a lot of small, profitable, you know, little fishies in the sea.
Right. So what does Google do? Back to your question now. What does Google do about Google TV?
Well, I'm a little worried. You know, by the way, the Boxy box is like any minute now. In fact, I just checked Amazon. It said in stock. So it's not just Google TV. It's a lot of devices. Maybe the Boxy box will be the one. I don't know. But what's clear is the content providers have made a very big distinction between watching a show over the internet on a computer versus watching a show on the internet on a television. It seems to me an arbitrary distinction.
Oh, it's completely arbitrary.
And kind of nutty.
They haven't, for whatever reason, the content providers for video haven't been that inclined. I think a lot of it is they watched music get really steep. They watched Apple take a chunk out of music, and they're really afraid to let that go.
Yes, of course.
Because it's also, Joel, you're right, because it's ad-supported, which is Google's whole business.
Right. And I mean, but what I think it, you're almost, Jeff, I think you're almost on something where I feel like a lot of the
That's
missing
usually
pieces,
where I am in life.
yeah. On to something.
Almost. Yes.
Almost. Not quite there. Go ahead.
It's all about content, I think, ultimately, and it's about things that people want to watch.
Well, we want it to be all about content.
So,
absolutely.
Well, I think it is, though, but I think it's about the amount of money it still takes to create the kind of content we want to watch. Like,
but that's going down.
That's those blockbusters you're talking
about.
But
it's not going down in certain ways. Like, I think the middle is going away, and expensive things are more expensive and cheap things are cheaper. But
here's the risk. And I think that this is a very real risk, although others don't, that if you do things like block Gina for all of this stuff that she wants to watch, she's just going to go to BitTorrent. The real risk is this, you know, this is what the music industry realized is if you don't make it digitally available legally, people will get it illegally. So that's when they finally came around and said, all right, well, everybody but the Beatles, we better sell it on iTunes because otherwise people are going to rob us blind. And they gave up on these, you know, backhanded measures to preserve it by lawsuit and prosecution. And they said, all right, we give up. We're going to sell it digitally. I think they've got to do this. And the business model, blah, blah, blah. It's going to come down fundamentally. People are just going to steal it from you. If you don't do it, they're going to steal it. If I want to watch a sci-fi TV show and I don't get it on my Google TV, I always have BitTorrent.
Yeah, but I wonder how much of the... I don't think they're losing as much to piracy. I certainly don't think they're losing as much to piracy as they always claim.
But they will.
Losing.
They will increasingly.
But I think that maybe. I think more they're just losing possible sales. You know, they're losing the opportunity.
It's an opportunity cost. Okay, but it's still a significant opportunity cost.
If you're talking about Comcast, we're talking about the people that are actually distributing a lot of this content and a lot of the channels, they're still making money hand over fist. So they're not in a situation where the initial borderline profits, I mean, Hulu just had, what, a $250 million revenue quarter, I want to say, maybe it was a year. Like, that's, you know, that's good, but that's chump change for a big media company to have.
No, in fact, the media companies see it as incremental value. They don't see it. They see it as, we already made the show. We'll let the kids watch it on their computers. But they damn well better not watch it on their TVs, because that's where we're making the money.
But that's what's going to switch.
All I'm saying is that, I'm sorry. All I'm saying is that I think there's something that hasn't quite been done yet, which is to make something that is has the cultural impact of a Mad Men or a Sopranos or... You know,
I want to do it in audio because it's so cheap to do audio. I think there's got to be a Matthew Weiner out there who can't get on HBO or AMC and says, what if I just did not even a video version, but an audio version of this? I'm waiting for if somebody did The Wire on audio and it was so compelling that you had to listen to the next week and the week after that. Something like that could tumble. Do we acknowledge it's a house of cards and it could be tumbled if somebody would just come along and tumble it?
And if it's their motive to own it, I think that's the key. You know, Howard Stern has talked about this now, and it's negotiating.
That's what's going to happen.
Serious, but he wants to own it.
When the creatives finally say, I give up on these Fakatka networks, they haven't had a choice. They don't realize yet that they have a choice. So they're just doing it the way they've done it all along. They're going to Hollywood with their script in their hand. But they don't have to do that anymore. When they start realizing that, eliminate the middleman, they go direct to their audience. I think that they could change the world.
Leo, did you see The Commuter, the movie made entirely on the Nokia N8?
No. Awesome.
I sent you the link.
All right, let me see it.
On
Google Docs?
Skype.
On Skype.
Skype.
Okay, I will never get you to see it because you're there.
Oh, I see.
I can't make that. I mean, I could get rid of you and play it.
Put it on Google Docs.
I feel like we need more Joss Whedons making that crossover, and also I would love to see Howard make that shift, and then kind of younger filmmakers can kind of emulate that as well.
This is why it takes 15 years, Joel, is because it takes a generation that doesn't have it in their head that you go to Hollywood with your script and you beg and plead and say, can you please greenlight my deal? It's not about money. I think it's about habit. And
I think it's a lot about money, though, too. Like, even if you have a huge success on the internet that you've produced using all the opportunity that technology gives you, there's still a lot more money.
I disagree.
Creatives, I think.
Yeah, I understand. But I think creatives are not driven by money. They're driven by control. They're driven by a lot of things. And I think that you're going to see a new generation that says, first of all, that doesn't have the expectation. You know, if you're a rock and roll band, and you look and say, geez, I want to do as well as Aerosmith and AC/DC did. I want a triple platinum album. Those days are going away. And I think musicians are going to rapidly come to the conclusion, I just like to make a living. And I think that you're going to get to that point as well with content creators. People want, it's not just money. It's control. It's
a relationship to the audience. It's new opportunities
other
to have
stuff.
Higher value.
Yeah. And I think Howard's a very good example. Now, you got $500 million from Sirius.
I mean, ignore that part.
He wants control.
But
go look at the bottom of the Google Doc.
I will click this. This is the N8. So now, but they're not really. This is on YouTube. They're not releasing this in any way.
No. This was to demonstrate the possibility. And obviously, we know that you can do a cheap camera, but it still says that you can do it amazing. They put it on a nice holder, and it looks pretty cool.
Well, and I'm seeing really good high quality Hollywood quality stuff done on DSLRs.
Yeah. Well, we shoot everything with DSLRs now, and they are amazing.
Yeah, like, why buy a camcorder? You'd be nuts to buy a camcorder.
I mean, you still want writers and talent and all that stuff, and that's where expense comes in. But you're not paying gaffers to sit on their ass.
Gaffers to sit on your affers. So The Commuter. Let me see here. Let me get the highest quality. This is from Nokia UK on YouTube. You know, only 379,000 views, which is kind of in. How long has this been around?
Not that long.
So this is shot on an N8 camera phone.
Yep, the whole thing.
Wow, looks good.
Yeah, the N8 has a pretty good imager.
It's probably 720p, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Oops, I'm sorry. You're not seeing anything. Let me push the button.
We're seeing that the ad for Squarespace is coming.
Yeah, that's what you're seeing. You're seeing my ad copy. So this looks pretty good. Ozzy, it's
obviously
okay.
It's
just a movie, Ozzy. Well, but that's the point, is that the means of production and distribution are virtually free or very low cost. But creatives are, you know, talent is what's valuable.
Well,
somebody to write and edit, you know?
The thing that I feel like Google, to bring it back to this, because this was actually where I had initially meant to go, is I never quite understood why Google doesn't fund some content.
Well, they're doing it with journalism, right? Why?
Here's why.
Why?
Because they'll find themselves in the exact same pickle they were in with Google Books. They're in channel conflict.
And you know,
by the way,
they're accused of pointing to their own stuff at the expense of others, and then you're going to find that becomes an antitrust issue.
By the way, that guy in the star of the NA movie, you know who that is?
Yeah, he looks familiar.
Yeah, Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, right.
Dev
Slumdog.
Patel and Eileen Rivera just told me. Yeah. The Commuter. You know, obviously Nokia probably spent a lot of money, millions on him and the director and the writer and the shooters.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that those talents aren't restricted. There's got to be a whole generation growing up with these skills.
And you get rid of the middlemen and you don't go through the sieve that is Hollywood.
Yeah. You're not building a big house for some guy who made the deal. So you get little more, right?
Look at this, Leo. I'm on TV.
Right.
To you.
Right? I'm on TV.
The bad taste to put me here.
I'm on TV, Ma. I think it's, I think we're, you know, this is why it takes a long time. Not, it's not that the technology takes a long time. Old habits die hard. It took more, it took almost 100 years after the invention of movable type for anybody to do anything but print more Bibles.
Exactly.
But after a while, people said, oh, you know, and novels and plays and the Reformation happened. It just takes a little while. Now, I think it's happening faster with the internet than it than 80 years.
But it
years.
Still takes time.
But it just
I realized I wrote the syllabus for my class in new business models for our new MA degree in entrepreneurial journalism. And I realized that what I have to teach is disruption.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the lesson. And so I'm gonna have the students take on a week underbelly of something in the old media and do a plan of how to disrupt it.
You know what's interesting is I sitting here on this new media perch, which is essentially a 65 centimeter inflated ball, and I realized that I'm only here for a few years, and then somebody's going to come along and disintermediate me. That's fine. I think that's exciting. You want to live in a time where these things kind of get tossed up and disrupted, and that's good. And I think it will get disrupted. I think you're right, Jeff, that Google's role is not as a disruptor. That they probably are smart enough to think we can just sit back. We're just providing the pipes, providing the means, providing the search. I want to talk about they're doing something interesting with YouTube though. We're going to talk about that. Something called Topics. But before we get there, I would like to talk a little bit about Squarespace.com, which is a tool for disruption as well, a way you can create a website. Look, if the other day I was looking for a business, it didn't have a website. And I said, you know, I don't go, what are you, huh? Do you think a business these days can survive without a website? And maybe you're scared off and say, well, I'm not going to do a website. I don't know anything about it. And I can't figure out how to find a designer and go to Squarespace.com. They start with these 60 great templates you can customize without knowing anything about design and get a great site. If you go to the examples page here, you can see featured sites, blogs, design and art. But there's also e-commerce. There's restaurants. There's wineries. There's plumbers. It's all here. Anything that – look, this is exercise equipment. These guys, this is a big business. They created a website very easily on Squarespace.com. Now, they get some real advantages here. First of all the hosting, all the technical stuff is done by Squarespace. All the updates, you don't have to worry about security ever because your software is always up to date. Squarespace takes care of that. All the bandwidth is always there. You never run out of bandwidth on Squarespace.com. They have very sophisticated Java-based VPS solution that I don't have to get technical on you, but it really... You cannot bring a Squarespace site down. Here's a lot of restaurants use Squarespace. If you have a small business and you don't have a presence on the internet, I can't imagine you're listening to this show, but maybe you know somebody. I think the people who listen to this show are the kind of people that businesses come to and say, I need a website. What do I do? Just tell them Squarespace.com. In fact, tell them Squarespace.com/twig. They can click the try it free button. You know what? Alex Lindsay was in a restaurant the other day. They didn't have a website. Before he left the restaurant, he whipped out his laptop. He set up a site. There's no credit card or anything. You just set it up and you've got it. And he literally put together a site using their templates and said, here, if you want it, I'll transfer it over to you. Here's the password. It's yours. That's the kind of thing. I mean, and it starts at $12 a month for hosting and all the software, everything you need. If you do use the promo code TWIG, you'll save 10% a month for the rest of your site, the life of your site, forever, basically. So do use that promo code TWIG when you set it up. This is just a great solution. They things like we on our Inside Twit blog, we use a Squarespace iPhone app, not merely to post, but also to moderate comments and view site stats. It's really great to make sure you don't have spam in your comments, that kind of thing. This is just fantastic. Squarespace.com/twig. Try it free for 15 days. You can even import your existing site if you have one, movable type, WordPress, Typepad, or Blogger APIs are supported. And then if you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIG, and you'll save big every single month, 10% a month. I love Squarespace. Lots of friends using it. We use it for our blog. It's just fantastic. So, interesting move. Google's going to add... Now, one of the things that Google does right now when you go to YouTube, you watch a video, you get related videos. And actually, I think that's a bone of contention because if you're a content, like I'm a content creator, sometimes those related videos, I really don't want them to show up. You can't turn them off. Or they're inappropriate. Now they're going to do something called topics. I haven't seen these yet, but apparently it's starting to appear on YouTube.
Tonight, they CNET reported, it's supposed to show up in Test Tube, which is their like
Oh, you have to go labs. To Test Tube. Okay.
Yeah, their labs area. And I'm not seeing it in mine right now. But yeah, no, these topics are basically going to be, they're going to look like tags, but they're more than that. CNET, this is Tom Krasit writing for CNET, said that they're the product of sophisticated analysis of comments, viewing patterns, and other signals that will automatically appear above videos.
So it's kind of like related videos, but better.
Right, right. That sounds like that's the goal.
Yeah.
So if you search for Lady Gaga, the screenshot here, you'll get kind of explore. You'll see Justin Bieber, Poker Face, Miley Cyrus, Katy Perry, kind of related videos that you might be interested in.
That's one of the problems I have. You know, I'm even looking at my recommendations on YouTube. And, you know, one of them is my own video. White Tiger Wants to Play. I don't know why that's recommended. Some of it makes sense. Some of it makes no sense at all. And I think that they could do a much better job. I know that's a hard thing. Recommendations are a hard thing to do, but topics might be the solution. Just give me some keywords and I can drill deeper.
They just need to recommend Kit Kat videos to everyone. And everyone
you all get the same stupid recommendations? Do you think they're paying for that?
No, I'm asking you, would you pay Leo to control some of that recommendation space?
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Of course, you put those topic words and then one of them sponsored.
Right.
Doi. Those Google guys is always thinking. Did we mention the Google Maps border dispute? Or was that on Twit we talked about that?
We haven't.
I think on Twit. It's pretty amazing.
The latest now, the Nicaraguan embassy in London says the government of Nicaragua has formally requested Google not to accept the formal petition of the government of Costa Rica to modify the border demarcation. To see, apparently a Costa Rican general used the Google Maps to justify invading Nicaragua, saying, no, that's our territory. Google says, we got the data from the U.S. government. Go complain to them. It's just what happens when you make maps. Google did post.
Did they say who actually? Because is this actually Google's map, or is this something they bought?
It's from the State
else?
Department.
Oh, that's funny.
But if you go to Bing Maps, by the way, you get a different interpretation of where the border is.
That is the best fanboy war that I've ever seen. if you're a Microsoft fanboy, then you are on this side of the border.
Right.
If you're a Google fanboy, you're with guns over here.
Yesterday, we became aware of a dispute that referenced the border between Costa Rica and Nicaragua as depicted on Google Maps. This morning, after a discussion with the data supplier for this particular border, the U.S. Department of State, we determined there was indeed an error by up to 2.7 kilometers. The State Department gave them the corrected version, and they're going to fix it. So Bing had it right. And by the way, the Google posting then refers to President Grover Cleveland and the 1888 arbitration agreement. And this drawing, which is apparently on a notebook with lined paper.
Wow.
From 1888. I guess, you know, the world, you know, it's a complicated place. You get in the map business, you never know what you're going to find out. There's a new AdSense interface. Do we care?
Have you looked at it, Jeff? I haven't looked at it.
No, I don't use AdSense.
You guys, I don't use AdSense either.
No.
Actually, I used to, but no, I don't use it lately.
I have like $2 in an AdSense account somewhere.
Yeah, I know, me too.
Like every once in a while I get this too. Email that'll be like, really, we want to pay you. And I'm like,
But we don't want to send a check because that costs us $5.
Right.
So would you like stamps? The new interface is full of features that make it, I don't know. Just, you know, if you're an AdSense user, go check it out. There's a nice video.
Yeah, just go check that out.
Go check it out. We give you the news.
I got some news here.
We report you. Go check it out.
Do we say this already? Google said apparently the guy who broke the bonus memo was fired.
Oh, dear.
Oh,
CNN Money says after the money, the memo was leaked to Business Insider, which broke the news. Within hours, Google notified its staff it had terminated the leaker.
How'd they find out?
I don't know. You wonder if everybody had a different amount. We're giving a bonus of $999. Oh. Oh, no, it's you with $1,000.
That gets sticky.
Or yellow dots on the printout.
I hope they didn't like snoop on the Gmail. That would be very wrong.
That's probably what they did. Sure.
There'd be nothing wrong if they're snooping on their corporate
Completely
Gmail.
Legal to do
I
that.
I know, but it is legal, but it still makes you, it's as they say at Google, creepy.
Well, we got to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
So what are your what's your take on this fracas between Facebook and Google?
I was hoping you'd tell us that.
Facebook's attitude is we import everything, but we don't give you anything. And in some degree, you can defend that. You know, we've all been hard on Facebook over privacy. Facebook saying, well, look, you know, we have an agreement to keep this stuff private. So for conveniences, we're going to allow you, for instance, on Facebook. You know, when you say find friends on Facebook, give me your Gmail thing. I'll look at your Gmail and I'll find some friends on there. And Google just cut that off saying, well, wait a minute, it's not reciprocal. We want to be able to do the same thing with Facebook. But I understand Facebook's point of view we said it would be private. We can't just let you have it.
Yeah, but I can say whether or not I want my friends to have access to my email address.
So
if I say, Leo, when you and I are friends, you can see my email address, then I'm okay with you having access to that address on your, you know, Facebook widget on your phone or being able to export it. I mean, it's my contact information. It's like giving a business card. You know, this whole thing got really ugly. I didn't like the way either Facebook or Google handled it. I'll be honest.
A little sniping, right?
Yeah.
It's been really snarky.
It did. And I understand Google's point. I mean, they're kind of taking this very common open source culture, this like share alike kind of thing. Hey, you know what? Our data is not available to you if you can't, spit it back out. But then, you know, so they took away access to the API. So then Facebook just linked directly to their export page. And then Google put up this page that the header was called Trap My Contacts Now.
Hold on. This is what Google will give you when you use this Facebook feature to export contacts. Or import contacts from Gmail. Hold on a second, says Google. Hold on! Are you super sure you want to import your contact information for your friends into a service that won't let you get it out? Here's the not-so-fine print. I think Eric Schmidt should read this in his creepy voice. You've been directed to this page from a site that doesn't allow you to re-export your data to other services. Essentially, locking up your contact data about your friends.
Doesn't this whole thing read like it was just written by like some random engineer who was just really pissed about the whole
thing? Yeah, because it's kind of opaque. Yes. It's hard to understand. So once you import your data there, you won't be able to get it out. We think this is an important thing for you to know before you import your data there. See, this is bad writing.
Yeah. Jackass. The whole thing is kind of serious.
Fool.
Too, dude.
Fool. I pity the fool. We strongly disagree with his data protectionism. The choice is yours.
Google doesn't have their data. Google has my data. So if I tell them to give it to somebody else, I appreciate it if they do that. But it's like, and I feel the same way about Facebook. Don't get me wrong. They should give me back my data if I ask for it. But for Google to kind of act like, oh, we're being the nice ones about it and Facebook's evil is disingenuous.
Well, then, and look, it says, this public service announcement is brought to you on behalf of your friends at Google Contacts. And then there's a checkbox. I want to be able to export my data from Facebook. Please register a complaint on my behalf over data protectionism. Like Google's going to send them.
What's the whole thing now, though? How does this fit into the fact that you're supposed to be able to export your Facebook stuff?
Well, basically, Google kind of, I think I'm, Gina, correct me. Did Google basically back down but gives you this message?
Right. They give you this message. So you can continue to do it, but they give you this message. So they've got this like kind of anti-Facebook rhetoric going on where Joel's point is exactly right. If I'm saying get my contacts from Gmail and put it into Facebook, I know what I'm doing. That's what I want to do. It is my data.
I think it's a pretty important distinction. If you have, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but like whenever a company gives you a warning message, that's super important that they are objective about how they're presenting. Like that's not the time to be political. That's the time to say, here is the situation. And not like have some like, you know, angry.
If you're in New York market and you heard Cablevision and Fox go after each other.
Yeah, this is nothing.
They're the devil. No, they're the
this
devil. No, they're helping you, you know, and they're both the devil.
The only official, according to GigaOM, the only official comment that's emerged from Facebook platform engineer Mike Vernal suggested that Google is being hypocritical about data portability and is only concerned about it because Facebook's more popular.
I mean,
you're only mad because I'm more popular. And
I mean, this is the thing. It just is so childish on either end. And I just feel like you're treating your customers like they're idiots. Like, if I'm asking to go into Facebook, then I'm asking to get my contacts into Facebook. And you know what? Then I have a copy of my contacts on Google servers and on Facebook servers, and, like, I have access
to it either way.
I mean, I'm not being hoodwinked.
They're my freaking contacts.
Yeah, and these are just two companies sniping at one another. I wasn't a fan. I kind of expected this kind of thing from Facebook. I didn't really expect it from Google.
This is a big problem for Google. They have this institutional, I think, blindness that they think all their users think about them the way they think about themselves. Right. And that's why you have Schmidt saying all this, like, super.
It's not just
stuff.
Google. It's Facebook does exactly the same thing.
True.
It's this. There's a trend in Silicon Valley towards this really catty sniping. We've seen this the last couple of years with Jobs, Google, Facebook. And then there's this other trend, which you nailed, Joel, which is, well, you're all just like us. And I really like what you said. This is my data. That's the bottom line. Google, yep. You may hold it, but where'd you get it?
Right. I understand that, you know, that's my data is what I've traded for the services that Google provides.
But it doesn't become your property now.
Right. But, like, if it comes down to who owns my personal data, you know, me or the service I'm using, it's, you know, I guess you could argue it either way, but I don't feel that way personally.
All right, I want to take a little break, and we're going to come back with more. We are this is fun. Joel Johnson is here. He is from Gizmodo.com.
You said it exactly right, too.
Gizmodo, is that?
Yeah, that's how we all say it internally.
When you go to a party, that's the password. Where do you work? Gizmodo.
Also, No surprise.
Jeff Jarvis from Buzz Machine and Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org. I have a phrase for all of you. I also want to talk about Ford. Ford. I don't know how they say that. Ford. You know what they say? They call it the Blue Oval. I kind of like that. Scott Monty, who is their Twitter guy, their social media guy, says, we're polishing the Blue Oval because that's the logo. You know, it's really fun to see the old Ford logos. We went to the Rouge plant in Dearborn. We had a field trip. It was so much fun. And to see the original Ford logo is almost identical. You know, the logo with Henry Ford and the Model A is almost the same. The Rouge plant was built in the 20s by Henry Ford, who had this great vision. He wanted to build a plant. It's like a mile by a mile and a half. It's huge, that you put in raw materials. Like the boxcars come up with coke, not Coca-Cola, but, like, you know, iron ore and lumber. And then out comes, at the other end, out comes a car. The Model Ts were the first cars, but we saw the F-150 trucks being made. It's just really fun to see. In fact, you can go on a tour of the Rouge plant if you're there. Highly recommended. Highly recommended. It's a mile and three quarters long and a half a mile wide. That's the actual dimensions. With the factory we were in, the F-150 factory, has a green rooftop. It's a growing rooftop. It's got a succulent on it, which does a couple of things. Keeps it cooler in the summer. It absorbs runoff water so they can reuse the water, reduces energy costs, and, of course, it generates it sucks in CO2 and generates oxygen, quite a bit of it because it's acres. Really neat. You might want to take a look at some of the new Ford vehicles. The Fiesta is fantastic, 40 highway miles per gallon. That's the most fuel efficiency of any compact car out there. The EcoBoost V6 engine and the Taurus SHO, amazing engine. It's six-cylinder, 365 horsepower, very economical. Basically, the power of V8 in a V6 engine with direct fuel injection. The 2011 Fiesta, I mentioned that. Ford continues to innovate, and I'm really proud. Ford continues to bring heavy industry, keep it alive in the United States, keep the jobs in the United States, keep the innovation in the United States, and I love that Ford sink. You know that. Check out the new Taurus SHO, the new Ford Fiesta, the new Ford Edge. They got some great cars. And, of course, the new 5.0 Mustang, which is what I desperately want. It's all at your Ford dealer. Check it out today. Drive one this week. And thank you, Ford, for us. They've been giving such support to the Twit Network. In fact, I won't say anything else. We've got some things coming up I'm really excited about.
Hey.
Instant previews in search. People are getting all excited about this. This is you could do this before with a Firefox plugin. Gina, what happens when I go? Is this in the in Chrome only or where?
I think it's everywhere. You do a search. Actually, I haven't tried it in Firefox because I've only been using Chrome, but I believe it's everywhere. In your search results, there's a little magnifying glass at the very end after the blue link, and if you click on it, you can see a preview of
I don't know who that was. That wasn't Gina.
That was not me.
Okay, and so when I get there, there's this little magnifying glass. I click it. Oh, yep, that's cool. Well, you don't even have to click it. You could hover over it. No, you have to click.
Well, you click it to see it, and you can also use the right arrow key, so the down and right arrow key to expand
So neat.
The page.
It highlights the page. See, look at that.
It highlights the portions of text on the page that have the keywords you searched for.
And it gives you a call out.
You know, it's funny. Whenever I've used a lot of Firefox extensions that do this kind of thing in the past, and I always felt like they were kind of like a little bloaty and would just load this giant image. But this implementation is pretty good. I've been kind of interested. It's been interesting to see Google kind of move away. They used to be so militant about this bare bones set of results, you know. But they've been really loosening up.
Bye, Marissa.
Yeah, I mean,
you think it's because Marissa's not there?
Yeah, I don't think so. But they sound like gossipy.
They've been more liberal about adding little images and changing things around. I mean, that's a pretty heavy image to load. But they say
I'm not seeing it. Is it enough that you? I know the idea is that if you don't want to go to the site, you won't now. But is it enough to not go to a site you want to go to?
No. If you look on our shot now, you see it's very tiny. It really is more like oh yeah. I've seen that USGS site. I remember that. You'd still want to click on it. But I got to say, it's prefetching and caching, I would imagine, these pages. So it is adding to the overall page load. In fact, Gina, wouldn't geography.com, when I hover my mouse over it, wouldn't that sense a load, even though it didn't really get loaded? I mean,
probably caching something when the spiders are walking through, I would think.
It's taking a snapshot. Because if you look at blogs, it'll be kind of like an older snapshot.
Good.
Okay, so it's not loaded dynamically.
And it looks like, I mean, this is interesting. They really are doing a treatment to this, because here it is, geography.com, and it's a call out that says geography is the science of our world. I mean, you can read that. So they're doing some sort of, there is something going on with this. It's more than just an image. Wow, that's really interesting. So you think Rupert Murdoch, how do you think he's going to react to this, Jeff?
He's going to complain.
Yeah.
But actually, he took his stuff down anyway. So.
Oh, that's right. Is he not on Google?
He's on Google News. He took his stuff out of Google News.
Okay.
That's what I don't know about Google Search. I bet he's still there.
God.
The screenshots do not include the ads. Well, anything with a plug-in shows up as a little puzzle piece.
That's good.
It just seems like an easy way to recognize, like, oh, yeah, I know that page. That's the page I'm looking for.
So here's my website. Let's see. Yeah, the big puzzle piece there. Oh, yeah, this is old because it has the Halloween banner.
These are cache snapshots.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what kind of storage this was.
Good Lord. You know, Google just blows my mind. But they have to store a little bit of it anyway for their search. They're probably heavily compressing it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure if they're just saving images, that it's just a bunch of, you know, 100, 200K per site. Like, that's not a whole lot more, considering they're already basically caching the entire site.
Wow.
Yeah, and so there's the image. Then that overlay with the text is actually superimposed on top of the image.
So
that's just like the little snippet of text you see below the blue link, just superimposed on the page. Just to show you here, look on the page, this is where it is. Because if you right-click and open...
No, look. So on the left, the snippet has got an email this morning. This is on my website. On the right, one of the radio stations, this almost seems like a random snippet.
Oh, interesting. But like if you right click on the image itself and say open image in new tab, you'll see the image without the call out, you know?
Got it. So they are doing some
call out is, you know,
some JavaScript or something.
Some JavaScript happening on top. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. But now is this an image or is this this is the actual page. It pulled up the actual page for me. Well, I like that. It isn't very Marissa, but I am sure that she did approve it. Google Wave. I don't know if this is your tip, Gina.
Yeah, we'll save that for that.
All right. I won't mention it.
All right.
Her eulogy.
In fact, let's do it. Let's wrap her up here. Let's do our tip. Oh God! Well, how late did it get? Oh my God! I lost track of the time.
We're having so much fun, you know?
This happens to me every time with this show. It's supposed to be an hour long, and already we're like, you know, an hour and a half in. I'm sorry. Gina Trapani, your tip of the week.
So for the dozen of you who loved Wave as much as I did and actually bought my book and have Waves in Wave that you'd like to preserve, there's now an official export feature. So there are plenty of gadgets and bots that would export things in Wave, but they're all a little janky or had something wrong with them here and there. This is the official exporting feature that the Wave team promised when they announced that Wave would only be around this through the end of the year. So if you just go into Wave, open up a Wave, there's an export button on the toolbar, and you can export as HTML, a la Facebook export, or a zip file bundle with all the attachments that might be, you know, included with your Wave. And that takes a little longer.
How would you rebuild it? I mean, what would you display it in? As a web page or?
Yeah, it's all HTML.
It's just plain HTML.
HTML. Yep. So they're gonna give a way to export multiple Waves at once. Right now, this is a one Wave at a time thing, but they've been promising the whole time that export would be possible before they kind of shut down wave.google.com proper. So this is the first step.
Right. Your number of the week, Mr. Jarvis.
It survives the show.
It did. We dodged it effectively.
297 billion. Usually when you use a number like that big, it's Google, but it's not this case. It's Facebook. I was astounded at this. eWeek says that Facebook trounces Yahoo, Microsoft, Google in display ads. That they had 297 billion, I'm trying to see what the period is here, ad impressions for 23.1% of the market for the quarter. And so that goes up from 13.9%, you know, which is a 10% increase there, which is quite considerable. And it now swipes the mantle, as they say, from Yahoo. You know, that's to me utterly astounding. But when you have 500 million people, that's what happens.
Wow.
News sites in the U.S. tend to get about 12 page views per user per month. Facebook gets that per day. And that's why they have the scale. And so now, you know, we always thought Facebook has no business model. Well, hello. It's pretty impressive. And when you remember, too, they have incredible opportunities to target against this. However, here's the interesting thing. The CPM, the ad rate charged, is much lower. It's roughly a dollar compared with $3 for display ads on Yahoo. And so I find that interesting, but kind of, you know, you make it up on volume, and they really do. So that was pretty impressive to me. Yahoo was a distant second with 11% of the market and 140 billion impressions. Microsoft, 64 billion. Google, 2.7% of the share. But of course, they're not so much of a content site as the others. One more note on just advertising. As I thought more about Facebook deals last week, it really struck me the clever brilliance of it. That if you're going to have deals for millions of sites, the challenge is sales. So they got rid of the sales challenge by giving it away. And they'll get their free deals on here. And then, as we said last week, they'll be able to upsell the best ones to create ads to drive you to their places to get the deal. And the volume and the scale of Facebook starts to really take off here and show what's possible from a business model. And so these numbers just wowed me.
Truly amazing.
Yeah.
Just it's, it, I mean.
Crazy times.
Yeah, I don't think we would have thought of numbers that big even a few years ago. And it's just the beginning. We're going to start, you know. I mean, well, you know, it's funny, though, I have to say. I don't know, maybe Facebook slowed down or maybe they just stopped talking numbers, but. You keep hearing 500 million, but it's been that way for a while. I mean, I presume it's more than 500 million now.
I think I heard 550 is the latest number I hear out there.
Interesting.
I'll go look at it right now.
My tool of the week is something you can't use, you can't have, but maybe someday. It's called Rock Melt. Now, I think I sent you guys invitations.
You did. I couldn't figure it out. Yeah.
The reason it's on this show is because it is based on Chromium. You remember a browser called Flock some time ago. It was a social browser. Rock Melt is heavily funded by people like Mark Andreessen, who invented Netscape. In fact, the founders of Rock Melt, we interviewed one of them on Net at Night last night. Come from Mark's company, LoudCloud, and one of them from Netscape before that. So these guys have some history with browsers. Rock Melt is a social browser like Flock. Unlike Flock, Flock was based on Firefox. Unlike Flock, this one is based on Chromium. So if you're a Chrome fan, you don't lose your Chrome functionality, but you get a lot of social functionality on the side. The first thing you'll do when you launch RockMel is log into your Facebook account. No good if you don't have a Facebook account. So that leaves a few of you out. Almost left me out. I'm glad I went back to Facebook because actually it's kind of interesting. There's some interesting features. Now, there's the social features, which I won't dwell on, but these are my friends on the left-hand side based on recent posts on Facebook friends. You can add feeds. So there's the tech meme feed, and it pops out, and it can also be torn off. You can also add Twitter. So there's the Twitter feed. It can be torn off. And so a lot of that functionality is you know, it's just kind of built into the browser. You could do that with extensions. But they also changed search. Notice that unlike Chrome, you still have that kind of search window, but they've put back the little search box here. Yeah, I know. I don't like that. However, you might like this, and I don't know. You know, if you don't go to Google.com and you hit Gina Trapani and hit return, the search results show up here with the thumbnails just kind of in a little side window here.
Okay.
Which I kind of like. If I get to a page I like let's say that WorkSmart video, let's go back to it. I can share it by pushing the share button, post a link to my wall or tweet it right away. And I can also, if I like this page, I can drag it over to the sidebar and it will take the RSS feed and add the RSS feed. So I'm going to add the RSS feed for Lifehacker essentially to my regular RSS feeds, which is kind of cool. So there's some interesting features that you can do with this. Very easy to share. I think this is worth looking at. Now, you have to go to rockmelt.com and request an invite. I understand they are rolling these out pretty quickly. Within a day or two, you should get an invite. It's no good, again, if you don't have a Facebook account because that ties everything to Facebook. It has one additional advantage. If you're worried about Fire Sheep, it's more secure because unless you log into Facebook directly, all of these logins are done via the RockMelt servers with SSL. So you could actually visit your Facebook friends, post on Facebook and so forth on open access points safely by doing this. So there's some advantages to it. It's kind of an interesting feature. There's a lot of features in here I didn't mention, but worth taking a look. RockMelt.com. It's free. It's based on Chrome. And they have been keeping it up to date. They say they will keep up to date. It's the Chromium open source version of Chrome, but they said they have an auto update feature. And in fact, I've already updated it once since I installed it yesterday. We are out of time. I want to thank you, Joel, for joining us. Really great to have you. Joel Johnson is at Gizmodo.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Joel Johnson. Thanks for being here, Joel. We'll have you back.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Great to talk to you.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Fun to have you.
Jeff Jarvis, of course, he's at BuzzMachine.com and he's the author of What Would Google Do? Soon to be the author of Public Parks. Any day now.
Well, yeah.
I scared him. Sorry about that. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org. And we didn't really get to talk about what you did in D.C.
It was a lot of fun. Developer Day. Hack Day at the FCC. We were hacking net neutrality into the wires of the building.
Really?
Trying.
Rock on. Keep up the good work. That's awesome. Thank you, Gina. Jeff, Joel, thank you for being here, everybody. You can watch us do this show live 1 o'clock. Every Wednesday afternoon, that's Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2100 UTC at live.twit.tv. Of course, if you missed the live version, please download the show. It's available to you at twit.tv/twig. You can also subscribe and get it automatically. It is a podcast, both audio and video. We are doing our best of. I want to encourage you to go to twit.tv/best of because I haven't told you, Jeff and Gina, we're not going to do a show the week after Christmas, give you some time off. But we will do a cutdown of the best moments of this week in Google from the past year. And we'd like our listeners to tell us what those were. Twit.tv/best of. Pick this week in Google and submit your favorite bits. And we will collate those and make a great edit that everyone will love to hear of the best of Twig.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And Joel, close your ears because we are also, I want to tell everybody, covering the Gadget event, the GDGT event, this Friday. Live from San Francisco.
I like those guys. I have no beef with them.
Yeah, of course you do.
They're doing good work.
They are. Ryan Block, Peter Rojas. It's
your forefather, your founding father.
Well, yes. No, Gizmodo's a different...
All right. No, Peter. Rojas started Gizmodo.
He did?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
He started them both, and that's why he's rich, and that's why I'm sitting in a house with no oil.
It's the genome. So he's in charge of the genome. You watch that live.twit.tv. Tom Merritt, Sarah Lane will host our live coverage of the Gadget event this Friday, 6:30 Eastern on live.twit.tv. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.